The Ankara-NATO summit is shaping up to be one of the more consequential alliance gatherings in recent years, and today's previews are revealing the fault lines ahead of time. NATO allies are eyeing a 70 billion euro Ukraine pledge. That's a number that needs context. For comparison, the United States alone provided roughly $175 billion in Ukraine aid across 2022 through 2025. A 70 billion euro collective pledge from all NATO allies sounds substantial, but spread across 32 member states, it varies enormously by commitment level.
The summit is in Ankara, which is itself a signal. Turkey is the NATO member most visibly cultivating relationships outside the Western alliance structure. It purchased the Russian S-400 missile system. It maintained trade relations throughout the war, and President Erdogan has periodically played the role of intermediary. Hosting the summit is a projection of Turkish influence within the alliance, and it comes as Ankara is reportedly seeking concessions on F-16 deliveries and Kurdish counterterrorism cooperation in exchange for its continued support for Ukraine.
The domestic U.S. dimension of the Ankara story is the Hegseth situation. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth had reportedly been pushing for further cuts to U.S. troop deployments in Europe beyond the reductions already announced earlier this year. Secretary of State Rubio intervened and had those proposals pulled back ahead of the summit. The fact that this disagreement is playing out in public, or at least in leaks, suggests the U.S. foreign policy apparatus is genuinely divided on European commitment levels right now.
It also creates an awkward dynamic for American allies who are trying to read Washington's long-term intentions. European defense spending has increased substantially since 2022. Germany's 2% GDP commitment was unthinkable 5 years ago, but those decisions were made in a specific threat environment. If the U.S. is internally debating whether to reduce its European footprint, European capitals are going to accelerate their own defense industrial investments, regardless of what the summit communique says.
The Russia fuel crisis adds a fascinating layer to all of this. Reports today indicate gasoline has run out in a major Russian port city. We believe this refers to the Novorossiysk area, though Russian state media is not acknowledging the specific location. This follows weeks of reports about fuel shortages spreading from more remote regions.
The geopolitical signal here is significant. Russia's ability to project military force depends on logistics, and logistics depends on fuel. If domestic shortages are reaching port cities, which are typically priority nodes for fuel distribution, that suggests the cumulative pressure of export revenue losses, refinery damage, and ruble depreciation is straining the system in ways that weren't fully anticipated 18 months ago.
And then there's the polymarket bet. An anonymous actor has wagered $400,000 on Putin losing power in 2026, with a potential payout of roughly $2.5 million. These prediction market positions get covered in ways that sometimes overstate their significance. $400,000 is a drop in the bucket for any serious geopolitical actor, but it does tell you something about the information environment that sophisticated traders apparently see enough uncertainty to make that bet at a price they consider favorable.
The Hormuz situation also feeds into this segment, because the recovery of oil flows through the strait is directly connected to the state of the Iran-Israel confrontation. Tucker Carlson said in his Columbia Journalism Review interview that he hasn't spoken to Trump since the Iran war began. That's the first confirmation I've seen from a prominent Trump-adjacent figure that the U.S. was materially involved in what happened with Iran. Oil dropping to four-month lows as Hormuz flows recover is an economic signal that the acute phase of that conflict has passed. But the Lebanon story, with President Aoun defending the U.S.-brokered framework while Hezbollah and Iran reject its terms, tells you the political resolution is nowhere near complete.
The U.S.-Iran negotiator assassination allegation is the most explosive geopolitical story of the morning. The New York Times is reporting that American officials were genuinely concerned Israel had plans to kill Iran's foreign minister and parliament speaker during spring ceasefire talks. If accurate, this means Israel was considering targeting individuals who were engaged in diplomacy with explicit U.S. backing. The relationship between Washington and Jerusalem is clearly under far more strain than official statements acknowledge.
The DOJ-ICC story connects here as well. The Justice Department has sent a letter to the International Criminal Court in The Hague, explicitly rejecting its jurisdiction over American citizens and declaring non-cooperation with any ICC investigations. The ICC has been examining conduct related to the Iran conflict and has previously issued warrants connected to the Gaza campaign. The U.S. rejecting ICC authority isn't new. The Bush administration unsigned the Rome Statute in 2002, but formalizing non-cooperation in writing at this particular moment is a deliberate signal.